You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, January 31st, 2019.
For the first time that I know of, at least I've been a director for 12 years, and for the first time in 12 years, we do not have a waiting list. We can serve every single child as soon as we get appointed to them.
Monroe County Court-Appointed Special Advocates, or CASA, no longer has a shortage of volunteers. The area agency advocates for children who face abuse or neglect. WFHB correspondent Rasha Kamhawi brings us that report later in the program in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents their opinions on the Second Amendment, gun safety, and gun ownership. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
Jeremy Hogan was a staff photographer at the Herald-Times of Bloomington for over 20 years. Hogan, who produced countless front-page images for the HT, was among the first employees dismissed after it was announced earlier this week that the local daily newspaper was sold. Shirts Publishing Incorporated, who bought the Herald-Times in 1966, announced to staff at 9 a.m. on Monday that the paper had been sold to Gatehouse Media. Layoffs were expected this week before the final sale is approved and the company changes hands on Friday. Hogan was the first employee of the HT dismissed this week.
I went in on Monday. They told us that newspaper had been sold to this company called Gatehouse, and Wednesday I was homesick and I got a phone call that I no longer had a job, and that's really, you know, I don't know a lot about Gatehouse except there are a lot of stories online, so hopefully a bunch of my colleagues don't get laid off, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
Hogan started at the Herald-Times in 1997. Since then, he's been the community's eye for the vast majority of events transpiring in the area.
When Bob and I got fired, there were riots, which was pretty crazy. They burned an effigy of the president outside the president's house on campus and stole the fish out of the Stillwater Fountain and carried it all the way over to the Memorial Stadium. And one of my pictures went out on the AP and ended up on the David Letterman show. And another time I went down to a river rescue training exercise. It was kind of a dreary day. I wasn't really looking forward to the assignment. It was like a long journey. It was down past Bedford when we were a regional newspaper back in, this is 1998. And the river rescue training turned into the real deal. And one of the guys ended up dying. I had all these pictures, and it was sort of surreal. The next morning, I came into work, and there was a message from Life Magazine. They wanted to, you know, possibly publish these pictures. So that story was a very rite of passage story. You know, you get a big, photo like that. It goes all over the world. The paper entered the picture in the Pulitzer competition. I had an old colleague from the San Jose Mercury News call me up after the Pulitzer thing was denied to win, but he said, you know, he thought I should have won it. But that has sort of cemented my reputation here as a news photographer who could remain calm and, you know, collected in the craziest of situations and come back with the images, which is really what it's about. It's about, you know, getting the picture. If you don't get the picture, then you have nothing. You know, you got to get the picture. I covered other stories. Joe Behrman disappeared. Lawrence Beer disappeared. It's really sad and depressing stories. The Juan John Yoon shooting, and that was in 1999, July 4th. I was at home framing a photo show, and I got a call to get over to one of the churches here in town, and a white supremacist had shot a Klan student and killed him, and he'd been on a shooting spree across the Midwest, and I went there and made pictures of that, and that story was on the front of the New York Times for like 3 days. It was a big, big story. I covered the baby that disappeared and Spencer, and you know how tragic that story was. It's really bad. Like, even the police were like, just, you know, their faces just look like, you know, you knew was really bad looking at the, because police are very common professional, and to see the police that upset, you knew was really bad. That was a really hard story to cover.
Hogan says his departure from the Herald Times is the latest in a series of downsizing of the paper's photo department.
I don't think there will be the kind of photo coverage there was, because I worked there full-time. We had another photographer full-time. At one time, we had, like, four photographers. They each round of layoff, you know, they've whittled down the photo department to now there's just one staff photographer there.
Today was longtime Herald Times editor Bob Zaltzberg's last day. Zaltzberg announced his retirement from the paper late last year. Gatehouse Media bought the Herald Times as well as seven other local newspapers around Indiana. That sale is yet to be finalized tomorrow. In an article today, Zaltzberg stated six employees of the Hoosier Times, which includes papers in Spencer and Martinsville, will also be laid off. Hogan and another company employee are the only announced positions to be let go from the Herald Times. Schertz also downsized Hoosier Times newspapers, letting go of 17 employees late last year.
Indiana legislators are supporting a tax amnesty program. Senators Eddie Melton and Ed Charbonneau co-authored a bill providing counties the ability to waive interest and penalties on unpaid property taxes. The waiver would apply to penalties accrued prior to January 1st of this year. To receive the penalty waiver, the property owner must come current with their past tax debt by May 1st, 2020. Indiana state senators unanimously approved the bill, Senate Bill 523, last week. It now moves to the Indiana House of Representatives.
With the 2020 census on the horizon, supporters of redistricting reform are pushing state legislators to act. Five redistricting bills have been filed in the Indiana General Assembly this legislative session. Among them, House Bill 1011 and Senate Bill 91 charge the commission with coming up with ways the congressional and state legislative districts could be redrawn to provide fairer representation. State Senator Mark Stoops of Bloomington was added as co-author of Senate Bill 91 last week. Indianapolis news outlet Nuvo reports many activist organizations are voicing their support for the redistricting bills. Among those are the ACLU of Indiana, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause of Indiana, and the Hoosier Environmental Council. Hoosier Environmental Council Executive Director Jessica Carbanda told Nuvo that time is running out. Quote, "If we fail to act in the 2019 session, we may have to wait another 10 years before we have another shot at creating fair maps for Indiana," unquote. Carbanda is referring to the 2020 census, which determines how many people live in an area. Those areas are then divided into equal populations for representation. Senate Bill 91 has been referred to the Senate Committee on Elections, but has not been heard. House Bill 1011 has been assigned to the House Elections and Apportionment Committee, and it has also not yet been heard.
An Indiana state senator has withdrawn a bill that would have eliminated child labor laws. Republican Senator Chip Perfect was accused by the Indianapolis Star Investigation of having a conflict of interest. The Lawrenceburg senator is the owner of Perfect North Slopes, a ski resort that allegedly employs some 300 to 400 minors annually. According to the Indianapolis Business Journal, Republican Chip Perfect requested that his bill be reviewed by a summer committee, essentially putting off any changes to it for this year. Perfect's bill would have removed work permit requirements for minors, as well as working hour restrictions for 16 and 17-year-olds. Under current Indiana law, 16 and 17-year-olds have a maximum work week of 30 hours. Employers can only have them work longer if they obtain written parental permission. Perfect has denied allegations that he has a conflict of interest as a business owner that employs hundreds of minors. The Senate Ethics Committee reviewed the bill, ruling that there was no conflict of interest, but Perfect still requested that the bill be reviewed by a summer committee. Perfect says that his involvement with the bill has become a distraction. Under Indiana law, legislators are not prohibited from involvement with bills that personally or financially benefit them. The 2019 legislative session began earlier this month. The so-called long legislative session includes finalizing the state's budget for the next 2 years.
The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has rescheduled a public comment period for an East Chicago Superfund site. Federal regulators canceled a public comment period due to the government shutdown. Residents of West Calumet had lobbied the EPA to take public input. The Post-Tribune reports the EPA has rescheduled that hearing for February 19th. The Associated Press reports the EPA will accept public comments on the cleanup of lead and arsenic-contaminated soils until March 13th. Over 1,000 people were evicted from the East Chicago housing complex after tests found high lead levels in blood samples from some children and some yards with lead levels over 70 times the U.S. safety standard. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograff and Ben Neoff. Slotograff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotografflegal.com. Slotograff Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Monroe County CASA, or Court-Appointed Special Advocates, is a volunteer-powered program. It recruits, screens, and trains volunteers to become advocates for children in the legal system due to parental neglect or abuse. As WFHB correspondent Rasha Kamhawi reports, after years with too many children and not enough advocates, Monroe County CASA is able to, for the first time, pair each child with an advocate.
Indiana is the fourth in the nation when it comes to the rate at which children are placed in child protective care. That's according to an independent report by the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group released last summer. The report says in 2016, children in Indiana were referred to child services at nearly twice the national average. The Indiana Department of Child Services has seen a dramatic increase in the number of children remanded to their custody over the past few years. Experts say a major driver to that increase is the ongoing opioid epidemic. As parents are affected by the opioid crisis, the number of children in state custody due to alleged neglect or abuse has increased. Kristen Bichet is the executive director of Monroe County CASA.
For the past two or three years, it's pretty evident that over 90-95% of our cases come in because of drug-related issue. Whether the parent overdosed or was arrested or got caught dealing, or the children have been left neglected because the parents are passed out or high. And so a lot of, I would say most, almost our cases are, have some kind of addiction issue involved. This was not the case 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I would say maybe it was 65-70%. But now when we get a case in and we look at the allegations and what's going on with the family, if there's not an addiction, we're surprised. So, oh gosh, this is a different case for us. So most of it is addictions, but what happens when a parent is heavily addicted, then funds are reduced from running the family. So lack of resources, and either they become homeless, they don't have enough food on the table, they get evicted from their apartment or house. Then there's also neglect of the child in the respect that children are often left alone, or there are a lot of savory individuals in and out of the home, either using with the parents or buying drugs with the parents or selling drugs to the parents. And the kids are exposed to people who don't have many scruples and sometimes harm the kids. That's where a lot of the sexual abuse happens also, through contacts with people like that. There's also when a parent is either coming off a drug or going too crazy on a drug, they will cause physical damage to the child. Broken bones, slamming against the wall, burning them with hot water. There are a lot of horrific things that go on out there. And so those are the kind of cases that our volunteers see.
Monroe County CASA has about 167 volunteers. They are trained to observe and interview service providers, family members, and the children involved in a case. They communicate the children's wish in court and offer their own recommendations.
Our volunteers, when they they're an amazing group of people. When Judge Galvin swears in a new training class of volunteers, he always tells them that they're joining the elite group of volunteers in our county. Our volunteers range from 21 years old to, I think, 85 or 86. We have a vast variety of education and experience that they bring to the job. What they do is they go through a 30-hour training, and then they take on a case or two, which would include either one single child or a sibling group, and they dig deep into the information about the child. They interview the Department of Child Services, the therapists, the teachers, the parents, family members, anybody who has information that could be of value to the courts. And when the CASA gathers all this information, and then they use that information to present to the court a written report on everything that's going on with the parents and the child, and form recommendations based on their information on how the case should move forward for what is in the best interest of the child. So they're doing a lot of interviewing, a lot of meetings, a lot of emails and telephone calls. They get to know the child. They meet the child every month and get to know what the child wants and or needs. And then the judge says, we have two taglines. We are the eyes and the ears of the court, and we're the voice of the child.
There was a shortage of court-appointed special advocates for years because of the increase in child victims of abuse or neglect. Bichet says this is the first time in her career there are enough CASA volunteers for each child who has become a ward of the state.
I've been a director for 12 years, and for the first time in 12 years, we do not have a waiting list. We can serve every single child as soon as we get appointed to them.
Bichet says while she's relieved there isn't a volunteer shortage this year, she says that's due to Indiana Department of Child Services taking on fewer cases.
Because of that report, they, DCS, have really slowed down how many kids they remove, and which means we get less cases. The fact that they're not opening many cases is not due because abuse isn't happening anymore. They just have raised the bar on when to remove the child.
The report Bichet mentions is an independent review of Indiana's Department of Child Services conducted by the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group. The report was released in June of last year and says Indiana's DCS has twice as many cases in court than the national average. The CWG report also found case managers have higher caseloads than state-approved standards. The report commissioned by Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb recommended reducing caseworker loads. But Bichet says that can leave some children in need of services.
We also don't want to leave kids in unsafe homes. And we here at CASA kind of feel that there's a trend going on like that.
Longtime director of Indiana DCS, Mary Beth Bonaventura, resigned from her position in December of 2017. Bonaventura accused the governor's office of cutting funding and services for her department and endangering the safety of children. Terry Stigdon is the current director of Indiana's DCS. She was appointed in January of 2018. For WFHB, I'm Rasha Kamhawi.
Support for the Daily Local News comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
In our modern day society, the theme of gun control is often debated by citizens due to the growing rate of mass shootings in our country. Public outcry regarding the subject has greatly increased in the recent years. Voices in the Street went out to ask area listeners about how they feel regarding gun legislation and whether they own guns.
Do you have any opinions on gun legislation?
There needs to be no, assault weapons are not needed except for the military in war. I'm okay with hunting and all that, but we've got to get rid of the assault weapons.
Do you have any opinions on gun legislation?
I do. I believe that obviously they don't need to be in schools at all. Teachers don't need to hold on to them. But I do believe that if you have a carrier permit, you have the right to have them. We just don't need like the automatic weapons at this point.
You just have to not be paying attention if you don't think it should be more strict.
I support hunting, and that's where I kind of draw the line with guns. I think having a shotgun is fine if you live in the woods and you want to shoot a deer, but I don't think much past that is...
What do you need an AK-47 for? You must be really bad at hunting.
Unless the deer have guns, too.
Yeah.
I think that it is very important. I think any kind of... I mean, anything. Like, looking at other countries, I think it obviously can make a difference and can make a change, and that it would be very important to kind of follow suit and at least try something, because something has to be done.
We're out of control, and they don't have anybody that has common sense about it, and it's not hard to decide what an assault rifle looks like or how it functions. Anything that's semi-auto should be banned. We're mixing up what we call psychological problems. Why have psychological problems combined with dangerous activities? It's a bad formula.
I definitely think something needs to be done. It's a tough one for me to answer, because most of my family is like really, really pro-gun, but I'm not, so I kind of have to like sit quiet at the dinner table because, you know, get yelled at.
I'm for everything that's going on about people trying to reduce the access to guns, I guess, or at least, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with him. Like more strict background checks, yeah, things like that, to just ensure that, you know, a lot of these atrocities that have been occurring at schools decrease.
We need massive gun reform. It's ridiculous that they don't have any background checks that are worth anything. I've known friends who've walked into Gander Mountain and walked out within a half hour with a semi-automatic. I mean, it's absurd. The whole system needs to be revamped. I've been thinking of nothing but since February 14th, so.
No, I don't think the public needs assault rifles, but for hunting and self-defense, I think they'll be allowed to have them if they aren't law-abiding citizens.
Do you have any opinions on gun legislation?
Yeah, I mean, this should keep our guns. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's why the United States has never been invaded, because, you know, all the citizens here have guns, you know. So, yeah.
Do you yourself own guns?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I have a lifetime gun permit, you know, so yes. You know, it is what, our Second Amendment right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
More for hunting, personal defense, or kind of everything?
More for hunting, you know, personal defense, you know.
I really don't think we need any of that real shoot 'em up stuff. I think everybody should have the right to have a gun. I don't know. No, like I said, I've got hunting guns. I hunt. And I think as far as some of those repeating rifles and stuff, I don't think we need them on the street.
It's complicated and difficult, and I see both sides, and I don't know, because for years I said no, we needed guns, because it's not fair to have one, you know, the bad guys just to have the guns and the good guys not to have guns. But the guns have become so extremely powerful and murderous that the whole Second Amendment thing is out the window, because it's not the guns that our forefathers were talking about.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM. Community Radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McCurran and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Rasha Kamhawi.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is producer Wes Martin, with help from Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is produced by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.